All right. Go ahead and have your fun. You think when Spurgeon was in college, he went, ooh! All right, get you some paper out tonight, pen, paper. So this will be the last class for the semester. You think when Jesus gathered the 12 apostles around the table, they ordered pizza, pizza, pizza? You think David's mighty men hollered pizza, pizza, pizza? Now, let me say this. If you want to order any of the tapes, if you don't have any, how many of you have not gotten any tapes and you'd like to have some? Would you raise your hand? All right. If you'll just get a piece of paper right now, write your name and your address on a piece of paper and tell me how many want all the tapes. Raise your hand. All right. Just write down all the tapes and the tapes will be the regular $3.50, I'm not sure, a piece. But write your name and address on a piece of paper. This will all be done through the college. And so if you slide the tape under my door again like you always do, and thank you very much. So we'll get them to you, and you can pay for them when you get them. But don't order it now if you're not going to get them and pay for them. We'll have them for you right away. Pass those, write your name and address on paper and pass them toward the aisle, would you please? You security guards, would you get them for me? Keep them till we get through here. Ernie, why don't you come over here to this aisle, because he's here at this aisle already. Put your name and address on the paper, we'll get them to you, get them for you, and let you know when to come and get them. Open your Bibles to 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3. I'm going to talk to you tonight about the way you treat your wife, but I want to entitle it this. One of the main reasons why you don't get your prayers answered. Just keep those fellows if you would. Give them to me as we go back over. All right. Heavenly Father, bless us now as we study the book about our treatment of our wives, and help us to gain improvement tonight, those who are married, and instruction for the future for those who are not. Amen. I'm just going to read the first 9 verses of 1 Peter 3. I'm going to read it all, but I'm going to start with the last line of verse number 7, that your prayers be not hindered. Now, that word hinder means detained. It means that your prayers are stopped on the way to heaven. I'll be telling you what to write down, by the way. I'll give you plenty of time to write down. But I'm giving you this word of introduction right now. It says, whatever this all is all about, one of the reasons is in order that your prayers don't get stopped on the way to heaven, that your prayers be not hindered. I promise you that many a preacher will walk in the pulpit tomorrow morning without the power of God because of the wrong relationship with his wife. I promise you. Because the Bible says you're supposed to have the right relationship with your wife, that your prayers be not hindered. I don't want you to forget that all throughout the lesson tonight, I'm talking about things that if you don't do, your prayers will be hindered. Likewise, verse 1, ye wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they also may be without the word, be won by the conversation of the wives. While they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear, whose adorning, let it not be the outward adorning of the plaiting of the hair and a wearing of gold or putting on of apparel. Every once in a while somebody says to me, it's wrong to wear jewelry. If that's the case, it's wrong to wear clothes too. It says, whose adorning, let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting of the hair, wearing of gold or putting on apparel. So if you're not supposed to wear any jewelry, you're not supposed to wear any clothes. It means that the outstanding thing about you should not be your jewelry or your clothes. The adorning means that thing that distinguishes you. What do people think about you? You've seen ladies especially that were dressed with a ring on every finger and five bracelets on and flashy hairstyle and look like whores. That's what I was talking about. It's saying you should not be known for your jewelry and flashy apparel, but now let's go on down to verse number 4. But let it be the hidden man of the heart, in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God a great price. For after this manner, in the old time, the holy women also, who trusted in God, adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well, and are not afraid with any amazement. Now we come down to the husbands. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife, as unto the weaker vessel, and being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. Finally, by the way, ordinarily when folks preach on this passage, they stop with verse 7. But it goes on to verse 8 and 9 because it says, finally. That means something's gone before. Finally, be ye all of one mind, it's talking about husband and wife, having compassion one of another, love as brethren, be pitiful, that means good-hearted, warm-hearted, good-hearted, be courteous, not rendering evil for evil, or railing for railing, but contrariwise, knowing that ye are thereunto called, that ye should inherit a blessing. Now, these entire 9 verses are talking about things that can stop your prayer life, things that will keep you building a great church, things that will keep you from being able to pray for your sick child. When you go to the closet and you say, God, you've got to hear me and answer me. God said, if you don't do these things, your prayers will be blocked on the way to heaven. They won't get there. They'll be hindered. They'll be intercepted, if you please. Now, I want you to notice tonight a lot of things. I'll just give you one and let you write it down. I want you to notice a lot of things that you must do in order to get your prayers, keep your prayers from being hindered. Number 1, write it down, dwell according to knowledge. Dwell with her. Dwell with her according to knowledge. I'm going to give you some mighty good stuff tonight, so follow me very, very carefully. Dwell with her according to knowledge. Look at verse 7. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel. All right, now, when you write that down, look at me. Dwell with her according to knowledge. That's number 1. What does that mean? That means learn her. It means study her. Do me a favor and just write down what I'll tell you right now. Now, don't take notes on the ad-libbing. It means study your wife. It means learn your wife. Learn her likes. Learn her dislikes. Learn her taste. Learn her favorite perfume. Her favorite places to eat, the expressions of love that she prefers. For example, as a young lady, you know how I cut up in the pulpit. My wife was very embarrassed because I would cut up with her in the pulpit. And she asked me if I would just let her be it freedom to feel at ease in the services. And so, for many, many years, I knew that was her lack. I knew that's what she, now then as she's gotten older and more at ease, it's not as difficult. And I often, of course, got up with her, and I think she likes it now. But I'm saying that you ought to study your wife, know what her tastes are. Bible says, dwell with them according to knowledge. Second thing, love her. Love her. I want you to look at what to me are two of the most amazing verses in the Bible. Look at verse 3. Talking about a woman's looks now. Whose adorning, let it not be that outward adorning, a plaiting of the hair, and a wearing of gold, or a putting on apparel. But let it be the hidden man of the heart, in that which is not corruptible. Now, look at me. Somebody says, that means that the woman is supposed to have an inner beauty. That's not what it's talking about. Look at verse 3 again. Whose adorning, let it not be the outward adorning of plaiting of the hair. This is talking about outward adorning. Now, what is it that it's talking about? It says that let it be the adorning. Let her beauty be caused by the hidden man of the heart. Now, that means this. That means that every woman, God has a man. That's not true. Your wife didn't get a man. But I'm talking about God, for women that are going to get married, should get married, God has a man for them. Now, that man is in her heart. Now, there's nothing that'll make that woman as beautiful as being loved by that man. Somebody said, I was out in California, and somebody said, Brother Hiles, at pastor school, every time you looked at Miss Hiles, there was a twinkle in your eye, and every time she was up there, there was a twinkle in her eye. And somebody said that here. You know one reason Miss Hiles is beautiful? Because I love her. The truth is, nothing makes a woman as pretty as being loved by her man. Let me make a statement. A woman is not pretty so you can love her. She is pretty because you love her. There's a radiance about a woman that comes when she's loved by her man that nothing else can give. I'm talking about let the outward adorning of a woman be the hidden man of the heart. It's not talking about the woman's, it says the hidden man. It doesn't say the hidden woman, it says the hidden man of the heart. It means that there is in every woman's heart, God has placed love for a certain man. She finds that man, and that man loves her, that gives her a beauty. You people often say, all the world loves a lover. No makeup or hairstyle or clothing can give a woman the radiance on her face as the awareness that her guy loves her. So you don't love her because you're not supposed to love her because she's pretty. You're supposed to love her to make her pretty. It is your love that is the greatest beauty asset she'll ever have. So if you want to get your prayers answered, number one, dwell with her according to knowledge. Know her. Learn her. Number two, love her. Number three, love what she loves. Love what she loves. Whatever your wife loves, you love. Now, I'm going to be honest. I don't have to be honest. You know this is true anyway. I know nothing about music. Nothing. All I know is on the songbook, I have some little round black ones and round hollow ones. That's all I know. And they got little flags up on the top. That's all I know. And I know more than that. When the higher they go, the higher they are on that little old doojigger, the higher your voice is supposed to go up. That's all I know. Now, my wife loves music. She's a musician. Music. Now, music is not a great part of my life. I hate to even say it, but I believe I couldn't live without singing. It's in here, but I never sit down and just listen to music. Never. I never turn on a tape and listen to music. I just don't do it. I just don't like to sit down and listen to music. I don't mind a little music in the background. Again, I like to sing. I like congregational singing. I like church singing. I like to sing myself. But I don't have music down in here. My wife does. So I force myself to like music more than I would like music because my wife likes music. I want to love what my wife loves. Now, what does that mean? That means love what she loves. Love her home. Love her flowers. Love her hobby. Love her eating taste. Love her food. In other words, you love what she loves. Number four, and I'm going to get down to something real vital here. Love what she is. Love what she is. Now, I'm putting the hook down in your mouth now, and I'm going to reel you to shore in a few minutes. I'm warning you. Love what she is. All right? Then, what is she? All right? Number five, that means you must love what she has been made. Number four was love what she is. Number five, that means love what she has been made. Number six, I'm pulling you to shore now. She was made by people. Number four, love what she is. Number five, that means you must love what she has been made. Number six, she was made by people. Now, follow me logically now, line upon line, precept upon precept. Number seven, that means you are to love the people that made her. You are to love the people that made her. I'll give those four again. Number four, love what she is. Number five, that means you must love what she has been made. Number six, she was made by people. Seven, that means you must love the people who made her. Now look at me. Carefully follow my logic. Your wife is a result of all the people who contributed to making her. Is that right? All right. That means, and let me ask you a question. And here's where I'm going to pull you to shore and hook you. Who in the world had the most to do with making your wife what she is? Talk to me. Which parent? Her mother. That means that for you to not love your mother-in-law means you don't love your wife. I brought you to shore, didn't I? I got you in a frying pan. Now, listen carefully. Your mother-in-law did more to make your wife what she is than any other person in the world. Then you're to love the factory that produced her. And let me just say this, too. I wouldn't give you one thin dime for your Christianity if you don't love your mother-in-law. I don't care what she is. I wouldn't give you one dime for it. In the first place, your job is to draw your wife closer to her parents than to pull them away from them. Since you've been here at Howells Anderson College, you've never heard me or anybody else at this college one time try to pull you away from your pastor. Not one time. The truth is, pastors all across America say that Howells Anderson College is the college that ties our young people closer to the home church and closer to the pastor than any other college we send students. Now, for you to try to sever somebody you love from somebody who loves them or whom they love or help make them is proof that you don't love them. You love yourself. If your wife and her mother are not closer because of you, then you don't love your wife. And the same thing's true with her father. I said she is a result of all of the people who've made her. All right, number eight, her mother. You can't love your wife without loving her mother. I can't think of a worse thing for any man to do. Now listen to me, fellas. I can't think of a worse thing for, well, no man does it. If you do this, you're not a man, you're a punk. Than to sever his wife from her parents. Do you know that Cindy Lynn Scott loves her mom and dad more because she's married to Dr. Jack Scott? He not only does he allow her to be close, but he encourages her to be close to us. Now, fellas, if you do not love your mother-in-law, you are a punk. Punk. And I'm not kidding. You no count. You no good. For you not to love the person that, listen to me, for you not to love the person that went to the jaws of death to give life to your wife, you don't love your wife. I mean, if all she did was carry her in her womb and give her life, you owe your mother-in-law love for the fact that she gave birth to your wife. She nurtured your wife. She fed your wife. She clothed your wife. She changed your wife's diapers. She cleans your wife's house. And you sorry, good-for-nothing, lousy, stinking idiot. You dare. You say, well, she doesn't love me. I'm not talking about whether she loves you or not. I'm saying you ought to love her. And you ought to do nothing in this world, nothing in this world, to cause your wife any ever to have to make a choice between your mother and you. You heard me say this. My wife and I got married too young. I was in the Army back in those days. All the soldiers, we didn't know if we were going to live through the war or not. We wanted to be able to be married at least to our sweethearts for a while. We got married very young back in those days. I got married right in the heat of the World War II. And we walked into the bedroom. My mother-in-law and father-in-law were asleep. Had gone to bed. They weren't asleep. And but the light was out. My wife and I walked into the bedroom and told them we wanted to get married. I guess they hated me. I don't blame them at all. But I said to my wife as I walked out of the door, I said, you'll live to see the day when those folks love me. The last words that my mother-in-law said that could be understood on the face of this earth were, I love you, Jack. Out there at Howells Anderson College Clinic. And she loved me like she loved her own son for the last good night, quarter of a century of her life. You know why? Because, well, for 12 years she lived in our house. And she was welcome in our house. Now, I'm saying that you must, to love your wife, you must love what made her. That means, number 9, you must love her father. You must love her father. Listen to me carefully, fellas. If you'll ever get this one thing, it'll be more for you than most anything in the world. You're not supposed to love somebody because they're pleasant to you. You're not supposed to love somebody because of what they are. You're supposed to love somebody because of who they are. Do you mean to tell me that I, and my wife, 50 years of marriage, not one time has she ever heard me criticize her mother, nor has anybody else ever heard me criticize her mother. You mean to tell me that you're going to let somebody carry your wife in her womb for 9 months and give birth to her and watch over her through the night when she's sick and take her temperature and rush her to the doctor and wash and iron her clothes and cook her meals and wash her dishes? You know what she was doing? She didn't know it, but she was preparing that woman for you. You sorry, good-for-nothing, ingrate you. You ought to love the woman, if nothing else. She prepared your wife. She gave life to your wife. And her father. My father-in-law, I told my wife, he'll love me. On his 70th birthday, I went into Christ, baptized him that night. Now, you know why? He provided the food for my wife. Till I married her. He bought her clothes. He put a shelter. He kept her alive so I could get her someday. Are you listening to me? He kept her alive so I could get her someday. Now, you like somebody according to how they affect your senses. They're sweet, they're kind, they're nice. Well, hogwash and poppycock and tomfoolery. You're supposed to love somebody because of who they are. Your wife's father. He helped to make her what she was, and you liked what she was, and you married her, and she was his product. Ten. Love her brother, sister, and grandparents. Love her brother, sister, and grandparents. My wife's brother, well, first place, we used to play on the same baseball team together. He played first base, and I played shortstop. And in softball, he played first base, and I pitched. He's a tall fellow. He and I were good pals. I'd call him on the phone. He's my brother-in-law. I'd always tell him I loved him when I hung up. No, I wouldn't. I'd say I love you, ugly puss. I love you in spite of the fact you're an idiot. Something like that. But when he got sick and was dying with cancer, I told him I loved him very seriously every time I talked to him, personally or on the phone. Number 11. Never be critical of any of them. Never. You're just like your mother. Shut up. Well, you're just like your dad. Hush. Hey, now listen to me, fellas. There. As your wife grew up, first her mother began making her what you loved. What you fell in love with. You fell in love with the sum total of what everybody's contributed. Are you listening to me? So, her mother contributed. Her father contributed. Her brother contributed. Her sister contributed. Her Sunday school teachers contributed. Her school teachers contributed. And down through her life, people contributed to make your wife what you loved or love. Many years ago, I sat down and longhand, I wrote letters. I wrote a letter to my father-in-law thanking him for helping to make my wife the woman that I love. I wrote my mother-in-law thanking her for helping make my wife the woman that I love. I wrote my brother-in-law, she only had one brother, no sisters. I wrote Buddy Slaughter, my brother-in-law, thanking him for helping make my wife the woman I love. I wrote every Sunday school teacher that she ever had that I could find, and I probably found a dozen of them. I wrote every Sunday school teacher and thanked them for helping to make my wife the woman that I love. I wrote every school teacher that I could find that taught her in school and thanked them for making my wife the woman that I love. You fellows haven't got enough character to stay awake. Go on out. Get out of here. Go on. Just get out. I'm tired looking at you characterless sluggards. I mean, I ain't getting sleep last night. That doesn't make a difference at all, brother. Those fellows down there in Oklahoma City didn't get sleep last night either. But they're pulling those bodies out of there. And you got one of these days, you're going to have a divorce. Something's going to wreck your ministry, and your wife's going to wreck your ministry. And you're going back yonder selling peaches in Georgia or selling insurance because you didn't listen to what you were taught right here in this room. I wrote her Sunday school teachers. I wrote her school teachers I could find. And I wrote everybody that I could think of who helped make my wife, who contributed to make my wife what she is. And I wrote them a letter of thanks and said, I love Beverly Joyce Hiles. And I want to thank you for making her the wonderful woman that she is. Now, she is what she's been made. She's not self-taught. Nobody's self-taught. Nobody's self-made. We're all... People, all you've often heard say, we are simply a combination of the people we know, or the people we've met, and the books we've read. But I'll say this, I'll say 90% of that is the people we've met influenced us. Across the country, people come to me and, oh, place, okay, I was at Dr. Jack Treber's church. He did not come to our college. I had four or five of his members came to me at different times this past week, this week, and said, "Thank you, Brother Hiles, for our pastor." Time and time again across the country, members of the churches pastored by graduates come to me and say, "Thank you for our pastor." You know why? I had some part in helping them become what they are. Now, that's one reason why I don't criticize your pastors. You don't come to my office to hear me criticize your pastor. I write your pastor a letter, every student's pastor a letter, at the first of the year, and tell him we're proud, pleased that we have the students, and I can never do anything to help. Let me know. I keep in contact on a regular basis with all the pastors of our students, offering my help and my services in case they need me. And look, I may not agree with your pastor, but he did enough to you to make you come to Howard Anderson College. That's one reason why I've never cast reflection upon my predecessor here, Dr. Owen Miller, American Baptist Convention, formal, high church, believe the Bible, but different from me as can be. But when I got here, First Baptist Church of Hammond had a credit rating. And the credit rating was caused because down through the years, pastors had led the church to pay their bills. And I'll never cast reflection. I'll tell our differences, but I won't cast reflection. Now you listen to me. Anybody has anything to do with making someone whom I love, I'm going to love them. And it's time some of you guys started a campaign to not just quit hating your mother-in-law, but start loving your mother-in-law. And start loving your father-in-law. And start loving everybody that had anything to do with making your wife the woman that caused you to love her. Some of you guys is all fired, lovesick, you're not married yet. You don't even know your wife's got a mother. I'll tell you something else, too. Some of you rascals, the parents don't want their daughters to marry you because you haven't got enough character to be thoughtful of who made your wife, your sweetheart, what she is. They should have gotten letters of appreciation from you. And they should see that their daughter's closer to them because... And you guys that are jealous of your wife's parents, may you get bed bugs under your armpits. All right? Number 12, look at verse 7. "Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with him according to knowledge, giving honor." That word honor means praise. That means that you're supposed to praise your wife. One of these days you're going to fall on your face and beg God for something. God's not going to give it to you because you don't praise your wife. Oh, you'll complain about that meal. You'll complain because the house is not as clean as you think it ought to be. You'll complain because she's not in a loving mood. But the Bible says, praise her. Now that means, I think, praise her publicly and also praise her privately. You say, well, why? To get your prayers answered. The Bible says, that your prayers be not hindered. I promise you this. More Christians don't get their prayers answered because of the improper relationship with their spouse than any other single reason. So, you go ahead. Don't like your mother-in-law, but don't waste your time praying. God's not going to hear you anyhow. Criticize your father-in-law, but quit yapping your chops at God. He's not going to listen to you anyway. Go ahead and gripe at your wife and never praise her. But don't start begging God for stuff. You won't get it anyway. God said that if you want your prayers answered, dwell with him according to knowledge. That means learn your wife, learn what she likes, learn what she doesn't like. Giving honor or praise of the wife. As unto the weaker vessel. Let me stop and say this here. You see that hand right there? You see that fist and that one? They've never lifted themselves in any way to hit or slap Beverly Joyce Hiles. Never. Why? She's a weaker vessel. Tonight we're at the table. She had a little sack of pecans. And she tried to open them. And the paper sack, I mean, a little sack of pecans, you know how they look. She couldn't open it. I thought it must be hard. Good night, opened and started falling out. It was easy to open. If we got in a fight, she hadn't got a chance against me. Not a chance. You no count rascal. You sorry worse than the heathen that would dare to lift your hand against a wife. Why don't you do her a favor and commit suicide? She's the, God said, treat her as the weaker vessel. You wouldn't go up to some little 5-year-old boy and start punching him out. Why? He's weaker than you are. Well, in some cases, I think he could win. Or aren't you proud of yourself? Aren't you proud that you, much stronger than your wife, have slapped her or pushed her? Aren't you proud of yourself? All right. The next thing. Look at verse 6. Even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. Number 13, be somewhat formal with her. I've mentioned this often. Be somewhat formal with her. Y'all too warm tonight? How many are too warm? Randy, could you make it a little cooler in here? It's real warm up here. Please listen to me now, and don't rack this, because I want you to hear me carefully. And I hesitate to say this because we have some unmarried folks here. But if you want your wife to make love to you in every sense of the meaning of that term, she needs to feel like you're sort of a stranger every once in a while. Remember that first time that you ever got to hug your wife? You just got married. You went out in the lobby or something, or you went to your room, and you got to hug your wife and love her like you wanted to all along. Remember that? Do you know why? And there's no time to snicker. Do you know why you enjoyed, one reason you enjoyed that so much? Because you had seen her dressed up, prepared, lovely, somewhat formal. Now, she needs to, if I were talking to women, I'd say they need to be that way around you most of the time still. And there was something about you in that suit or that shirt and tie, those shine shoes, that made you intriguing. You weren't just the old guy hangs around the house in shorts. Now, between lovemaking times, there ought to be, you ought to become that fellow on the first date again. You follow me? Let me explain to you. Follow this carefully. Every cycle between the times that you make love each other, every cycle ought to be a microcosm of your entire courtship. You met, you didn't touch. You wanted to touch, you didn't touch. You weren't allowed to, and you had too much character to, but you wanted to. She looked so pretty. Her hair was all fixed up just right. And you were always dressed just right. And then, over a period of years, you got to where you married her. Now you can touch her. And then closer and more, till finally you lived as husband and wife. Now, between your lovemaking times, that entire cycle ought to be done. Look at me. There ought to be times in your married life when you don't even touch her. There ought to be times when you have an entire evening where you go out, all you do is just hold hands. There ought to be times when all you do is just kiss your wife. And you know, that it will make her far more interested in loving you physically if you remain not only that husband, I'll get this at while, but if you remain that reserve guy she liked in the first place.
You know, she liked you before she could ever touch you. Well, then why don't you get back and be the guy she liked before she ever touched you? You know what the trouble is? You're idiots. You got rooms for rent upstairs. Do you know that my wife and I enjoy embracing more than we did 50 years ago? Well, we couldn't 50 years ago. 49 and a half years ago. But you know one reason? Because I'm her pastor. Sarah called Abraham Lord. There was a certain amount of reserve that is so vital if you enjoy the intimacy. But if you enjoy, if you're always pinching around on her and picking around on her and loving around on her and touching her where you hurt her vulnerable parts and so forth while you're walking around the house, you're not going to be fresh and different. It's going to be all the time. But there ought to be some time when you're where she could call you Lord. Number 14, look at verse number 8. Finally, be ye all of one mind, having compassion one of another, love as brethren. All right, I have number 14, love as brothers love. Or love as fellow Christians love each other. Love as brethren. By the way, he's still talking about marriage because he said finally up there at the top of verse 8. He's saying, husband and wives, be buddies. Be pals. Be neighbors. Friends. My wife said to me last night, she said, you're my only pal. Out of the clear sky. You're my only pal. I like that. I want to be your pal. I want to be her buddy. I want to be her friend. And that's what the Bible says. The husband and the wife are supposed to love as brethren. All you want to do is love as sex partners. I want to tell you something. That'll get mighty old if that's the only thing you do. And that's one reason why your physical love has grown cold, because that's all you wanted and you used it all up the first few years you got married. But if you would love as pals, love as buddies, love as friends, love as brethren, love as brothers, part of it. Look at verse 8 again. Finally, be of one mind. Number 15, be of one mind. Don't get your prayers answered because you're not of one mind. Doesn't my Bible say if any two of you will agree as touching anything on earth is done in heaven? Would that include husband and wife? But you don't agree. What does that mean? That means that if I want my prayers answered, my wife and I are going to have to be of one mind. Now, how can that be? Simple. I yield to her wishes. I yield to her wishes. He said, I'm a man. No, you're not. You're a bluff. No, it doesn't take... it takes manliness to yield. If Mike Tyson came here tonight and I challenged him to a fight, he'd take more manliness on his part not to fight me than to fight me. To restrain himself. Most powerful force in the world is restraint. Now that means... that means that I am to yield myself to her wishes. All right. Number 15, be compassionate. That's in the same verse. Compassionate. That means to suffer with her. Compassion. Passion meaning suffering. Calm comes the word con, which means with. To suffer with. She hurts, I hurt. She doesn't feel good, I suffer with her. Verse 8 again. Finally, be ye of one mind, having compassion to one of another.
Love his brethren. Be pitiful. That word pitiful means tender-hearted. That's number 17, tender-hearted. And the last word there is courteous. Courteous. Let me show you what courtesy is. Give me a guy here on the front. Why don't you come up here? Go over there. Way over there. Let me show you what courtesy is. Okay, we're coming down here, and we're facing each other, and there's not enough room, both of us on the sidewalk. You keep walking straight. This is courtesy. What did I do? I gave in. I come down this alley here, across the street. If I meet somebody, I always get off and let them have the pavement. Always. That's courtesy. Courtesy is giving in. It's always giving in. That's what courtesy is. Now, the Bible says you're supposed to be courteous to your wife. The other day I was in Maine, and my second floor motel room overlooked where Bill Burr parked his car. Bill Burr was leading the singing. And overlooked where he parked his car. Well, I could look out and see his car. So the first time time to go to church, he and his wife went to church before I did, because he wanted to get his music ready, and I was preaching second, so I got there about the time the service started. I looked down, there's Bill Burr and his wife going out to get in the car. Well, Bill just opens his door, plops in, and she stands on the other side. So I saw him at church. I said, I saw one of the saddest things I've ever seen in my life. What? I said, broke my heart. I saw a heavy-set man a while ago. He got in the car and didn't even open the car door for his wife. He said, oh, who? I said, you can see him in the nearest mirror is around here. You know, I sat up there and watched them the rest of that meeting. He opened that door every time. And as he opened the door, he'd look up, see if I was up there looking out the window. Now, the truth is, the honest truth is, that's about the only time you open the door, somebody's looking. I said this before. My wife and I go to a shopping center. I drive up the door. I let her out. I drive out in the parking place. I don't care how far it is, but you get in that parking place. She goes inside, sits down inside the door, waits till I get in there. Same way with a restaurant. Same way anywhere. We get to the door. She stays inside the door. I go out and get the car, drive up. She gets there. You say, but when did you start that? 50 years? 50, over 50 years ago, and haven't quit it. Now listen to me. You are supposed to be courteous to your wife, like you would anybody else. You know the woman. Bible says, and by the way, okay, oh, you say, oh, God, give me power while I preach. Hope you remember you didn't open the door for your wife that night. Oh, God, give me power. Oh, God, give me a great church. I hope you remember how selfish you've been. I would no more. I just come near jumping off a cliff as I would sit down and take a spoonful of any food on the table and put it on my plate before my wife has it on her plate. I don't care if we got six different bowls of food there. I wait till she gets through with the first one, then I pass to the next one. I never put food on my plate. You know why? I want my prayers answered. Oh, you say, come on, Brother Hiles. Yeah, that's what the Bible says. It says, be courteous that your prayers be not hindered. Have compassion that your prayers be not hindered. If you can't get your prayers answered, it might be a good idea to read 1 Peter 3, 1 through 9 every once in a while. And find out why. Of course, you're too much of a spiritual giant, too much of a he-man to give in. Number 19, Not rendering evil for evil. Not rendering evil for evil. Verse 9. In fact, it says that. Not rendering evil for evil. What is evil? Evil is when you do something that's sinful to hurt somebody. Evil is when you say something to your wife to hurt her. Or do something hoping she'll feel bad about it. Bible said, but you said she did it first. The Bible said, if you do it back to her, don't expect to get your prayers answered. Your prayers will be hindered. And then it says, not railing for railing. If your wife raises her voice at you, do you raise it back at her? Don't expect God to answer your prayers. If your wife says, oh, shut up! You're not supposed to holler back. So you think I am a mouse? Most of you are. If you holler back. You know, an old story I don't tell often. Do you know that firm quietness is stronger than hollering? I was on an airplane years ago, coming back from Florida. There's a black lady, had a little black boy over here sitting right across the aisle from me, and he was a holy terror. Kid's about 2 years old. I mean, tell you, that boy was bothering everybody on the airplane. Everybody's looking back. Everybody's disgusted. That woman rocked him, walked up and down the aisle with him. Didn't do any good. She gave him Coca-Cola. She gave him ice cream. She gave him candy. She tried to bribe that kid to be good. And he was screaming and hollering. And I leaned over to her and I said, ma'am, would you like me to hush your boy? She said, what makes you think you can hush him? I said, well, just... I'll do it. She said, what did you say method you're going to use? I said, I didn't say what method I was going to use, but I'll hush you, boy. She said, I don't trust you. About 15 minutes later, when that boy was bothering everybody on the plane, and she was about to have a nervous breakdown, she said, mister, would you still try to hush? I said, yeah. I said, now, man, you look out the window. Just let the boy sit right there beside you. You look out the window, let him scream. She did. He was hollering. I looked over. I said, him! Boy, sat there and he went. I was just there. I stared that boy quiet for one blessed hour. You don't have to holler. And the Bible said if you holler back at your wife, don't expect to get your prayers answered. That's what it says. Don't give railing for railing. If you holler back at your wife, don't expect to get your prayers answered. If you fight back, don't get, she hurts you, you hurt her. Physically or emotionally, don't expect to get your prayers answered. As I said Wednesday night, most of us do not believe the Bible. And most of you don't believe the Bible. You think the thing keeps you get your prayers answered is going and getting drunk. That will help you keep them getting them answered, but not any more than not loving your wife. Not any more than not loving your mother-in-law. Not any more than not loving your father-in-law. Not any more than not being courteous to your wife. Now, I'm going to read these just one at a time, and I'm going to remind you again of the things that'll cause most of you not to get your prayers answered. First, you don't know your wife. You don't study her. Second, you don't love her. Third, you don't love what she loves. Fourth, you don't love what she is. Fifth, you don't love what she has been made. Sixth, you don't love realize the fact that she was made by people. Seventh, that means you must love those who made her. Eighth, that means you love her mother. Nine, that means you love her father. 10, that means you love her brother, her sister, her grandparents. 11, never be critical of any of them. 12, praise her. 13, be formal with her much of the time. 14, love is brother's love. Be buddies, pals, neighbors, friends. 15, be compassionate. 16, have one mind. 17, be pitiful, tender-hearted. 18, be courteous or giving in. 19, don't render evil for evil. And 20,
Don't give railing for railing or screaming for screaming. Now, brethren, I want to tell you that if you will decide that you will treat your wife like 1 Peter 3:1 through 9, it will do more to unblock your channel to heaven. Most of you are not going to get drunk. Most of you are not going to commit adultery. Most of you are not going to go out and take dope. And yet there are preacher boys here tonight, preacher men here tonight. You're going to go out and you're floundering. I'll guarantee you. I can show you churches all across America where preachers can preach as well as I can. Doing nothing. You know why? Because they don't treat their wife like 1 Peter 3:1 through 9 says. Now I'm going to close. I want to tell you before I close. I've been up here every other Saturday night for this semester. I've given you stuff that will transform your life, save your ministry, save your marriage, save your home, make you immeasurably happy and those around you happy. Get these tapes. You listen to what I've taught. Listen over and over again. Teach it to your people someday. Keep it in your files and get it all ready so you can teach it to your people. And listen to it over and over and over again. It's so vital. We're going to take 8 minutes for questions and then we'll close. Over here, if you have any question about the women or marriage, raise your hand over here. All right, over here. Real loud. Good. If they're what? Sure. Of course. When I go to Dallas, Texas, I'll be in Dallas next month. I'll preach with Dr. Bob Gray in Longview, and I'll rent a car in Dallas. And I never go to Dallas without going to the graveside of my mother-in-law and father-in-law. And I go there, and I always... And I think they can hear me. I always thank them. See, what you don't understand is that people in heaven can hear you talk. I've been criticized because I say you can commune with the dead. Well, the dead can't commune with you, but you can commune with the dead. And they know what we're doing down, don't they? So if I say something, my mama hears me. I tell her I love her every morning. I drive by her house and I'm home and tell her I love her. So I go to my parents, my in-laws' grave, and thank God for them and thank them for rearing my wife. And then I honor their name. I keep their name honored. I say, how often have you heard me say, my father-in-law was an honest, good man? All right. Anybody, this section here? This section over here. Yes, sir. If there's a difference between my wife and me, and if she doesn't yield to me, I yield to her, yes. And my wife is a good wife, and normally she's going to yield to me. Let me illustrate. Yesterday, we had a date. And we won't have many Friday nights together now for a long time because every Friday night is taken just about all summer. I got weddings just about every Friday. I think every Friday night. There's something that's going on. Well, that was the last Friday night we're going to have for months. Now, we'll figure out somehow to have a date. But I had a big shindig plan. I really had planned something big. We were driving to get a bite of lunch, and I told her what I had planned. Well, immediately I realized that was not her favorite thing to do because she wasn't dressed for it. You know, we forget that women have to tell them how to dress for something. You know, I mean, you and I, we wear the same thing if we go to McDonald's or we go to Top of the Rock, you know. But she didn't tell me. She didn't say, I don't want to do that. But I sensed the fact that she felt she was not dressed for it. So we didn't do what I had planned. That's what I'm talking about. We didn't fuss. She didn't say, I don't want to. She never told me. I just sensed it. So I rearranged our plans. That means this, son. That means if I can't convince my wife that I know what I'm doing, I'm not going to force my will upon her. That's what it means. Okay, over here. Over here. Over here. Here. This is the dumb section back here. A little louder, please. Yeah, she asked me. She said one time, she said, "It embarrasses me when you kid about me in the pulpit." This has been years and years ago. I tested it a time or two, and I found out she enjoyed it. I never asked her if I could do it or what she thought anymore. I just tested it a time or two and found out that she liked it. Over here, we got 4 minutes. Over here in this section. Over here. Here. Yes, sir. Louder. Oh, when I wrote the letters to her school teacher and so forth, I didn't tell her what I was going to do. I said, let's have a little game here. Let's make a list of our favorite school teachers. I wrote one mine and she wrote hers down. I got that list, checked the Dallas phone book, and wrote them. I'm smart. Over here, I saw Esther. Say it. Oh, hold it. Don't criticize your wife right now. Well, if you have a question, but I don't want to get into personal things here. You don't do that. You love them. Then that's what I'm saying. I don't try to make my wife love her parents. Okay, I'm sorry. We have to end this. We only have about 2 minutes, and if you'll ask me a question, I'll answer you. But if you don't like the answer, don't argue with me. Okay, back here. You haven't got. Are you married? With a face like that, you'll never have a wife, man. No, listen. He'll get married. There are blind black people too. Go ahead. Go ahead. I never said anything about a relationship. I said love them. I didn't say convince them. I said love them. Never one time said to convince them. I just love them. Look, I got people right now who try to destroy me. I'll go down. You listen to me. I'll go down and I'll buy a gift, and I'll mail it from some city across America to them without any idea. They don't even know I'm sending it. I'm not trying to get them to love me. I'm trying to be sure I love them. Oftentimes, I'll buy a little gift somewhere in Phoenix, Arizona, or Tucson, Arizona, or Seattle, Washington, and I'll send it to one of my enemies from there, and they don't even know who sent it. I'm interested in loving them, not getting credit for it. Okay. Fellas, I'm going to close, but I want to say this again. I hope that a long time after the house has gone to heaven, I hope you guys will be happily married. And I hope that you'll not be selfishly married, but unselfishly married. And I hope that these notes and if you get these tapes, I hope somehow that you'll over and over and over again go through these lessons of this spring. Probably. See, your wife can... Okay, my wife can call a halt on my ministry anytime she wants to. My wife can decide tomorrow morning if she wants to for me to lose this church, and I'd lose it before tomorrow night. I mean, if you don't have the right kind of marriage, fellas, you're walking on eggshells in your church. You've got to have the right kind of marriage. Now, you say, okay, if I just shape my wife up. I'm talking about shaping your wife up. Shape yourself up. God will come near blessing you with the right kind of wife if you'll be the right kind of a husband. Don't worry about her response. You be concerned about how you treat her. If she's mean to you, be nice to her. And I hope, I really do. I really have felt a burden more than I ever have during the last few months of weeks of teaching these classes. I've felt a bigger burden. I've taught counseling in here. I've taught preaching in here. I've taught great men's lives in here. But I've never taught anything that I had a bigger burden for or anything that will help you more than what I've taught you for the last several weeks. Believe what I'm talking about. I know what I'm talking about. And I hope our time will give you a wonderful marriage. You guys have not married yet. You'll have the wisdom to choose the right one and be to her what she needs you to be. Thank you very much.